Ignite your passion for discovery at the Cosi Science Festival May 1st through the 4th. Experience 3 days packed with interactive community events featuring exhibits, live demos, and engaging conversations with experts in science, technology, engineering, arts, and math. And on Saturday, May 4th, join us for the free Big Science Celebration featuring over 100 exhibitors, all with interactive activities to share. And of course, there will be larger-than-life science demonstrations, live music, and more from 11 a.m. until 5 p.m. just outside of Cosi. Visit cosiscifest.org to learn more.
Support for GigPod is brought to you by Manscaped, who is the best in men's below-the-waist grooming. Manscaped offers precision-engineered tools for your family jewels. Manscaped is trusted by over 2 million men worldwide. Join the movement for all your below-the-waist grooming needs. Get 20% off plus free delivery with the code GigPod at manscaped.com.
Out of control.
Hello and thanks for tuning in to the Premiership Years from Glasgow's Green, aka GigPod. Over the next half hour or so, myself, Stevie, and my wonderful colleague Rizzo will kick off the first in this series filled with other guests, starting with August 2020. The R number in Scotland was above one and pubs were hanging on by a thread. International travel was deemed too risky. Just like Neil Lennon's decision not to play with a striker in a vital Champions League qualifier. Rizzo, GigPod hadn't returned in August, but Celtic had. And after some unimpressive friendlies that ultimately mean nothing, it was time to unfurl the flag and go for 10 up against Hamilton Accies in what was a 5-1 win. And yet, it wasn't all that convincing. Did you see any problems after match day one? Did you see the problems coming, basically?
Hi, Stevie, and hi, all our fans, for this great new series that will look back at a wonderful season, but not really, after that game. I mean, I thought it was just one of the typical like start of season games. I mean, we still managed to beat them 5-1. I think Eddie scored a hat-trick. It was a slight concern that Hamilton created chances, but then, like, the pre-season had been so weird. Like, I didn't really panic about it that much. I thought it was just a comfortable win, although it was a bit different when we talk about the next league game.
Yeah, when I look at that Hamilton game, I mean, they did create chances, yeah. But you look at us, you know, we had 15 shots on target. We controlled all of that game, 81% possession. And again, in that actual game, the pass accuracy was 88%. We actually managed to find our own players shot with a pass. It was quite incredible.
And that didn't happen often this season, so.
No, it did not. The starting lineup for that was Scott Bain in goals, with Frimpong, Julian, Ayer and Greg Taylor at the back. Greg Taylor assisting with two goals. He was very, very good in that game. Scott Brown, Callum McGregor in the middle. James Forrest on the right. Ryan Christie just off Edward up front. And then you had Mohamed El Younesi on the left. Now, see, when you look at that team, the formation 4-2-3-1, and you're like, get into that game. I mean, that is a strong team, isn't it? Now, I know it's easy to say on paper it is, but, you know, we don't play on paper, do we, John? But that Celtic side, it's not a bad team at all. And yet, when you look at it, the majority of that team are what really let us down for the rest of the season ahead. It's so strange, but it's all down to one man, and that was that man in the dugout with his coaching staff too.
And the thing is, that team had been rampant, like, until we had to stop playing the season before. If you look at, like, January, February, March, we're just like, we're hammering teams. I think the only game we didn't win was Livingston, that 2-2 draw just before the shutdown. So, no, I mean, everybody was probably thinking more of the same. And, like, we'll go on and we'll win the league, which, of course, we thought we would then. But, no, I think the worrying signs started to appear soon after.
Of course, John, our goalkeeper that we signed from AEK Athens, Vasilis Barkas, he was on the bench for this game. A lot of people thought he was maybe going to make his debut, but Scott Bain got the nod. Did you think that Barkas, it was only a matter of time really before Barkas was going to be our number one? It was just like a case of, I remember watching the game and thinking, any mistake for Bain and Barkas will be the new number one for us.
Aye, I thought it was just a case of like bedding him in and giving him time and inevitably he'd be number one.
Yeah, and we didn't even know who our number one is last season, no, did we? But yeah, as we said, John.
No, we've been three.
Celtic 5, Hamilton 1. 3 points, yep, all looks good. 10 in a row, formality. Anyway, we move on to our next game at Rugby Park, in which was a 1-1 draw on the 9th of August. We opened the scoring for Ryan Christie from range, amazingly enough, and, you know, 1-0 up away at Rugby Park. you wouldn't have thought that Kilmarnock were going to cause us any bother. This is a Kilmarnock side not managed by Steve Clarke anymore either. Alex Dyer was in charge. And that Kilmarnock team in general, I remember, first 20 minutes or so, it didn't look as if they were going to cause as many problems. Celtic were wearing the wonderful new away kit, the green one, which was a homage to Love Street in 1986. But Celtic's defensive frailties would show up for the first time when Chris Buck equalised with a 24th-minute penalty. And that was a pitiful game, was it not, John?
It was terrible. I mean, the biggest concern was that in the second half, when you'd expect us to like go out for a winning, for the winning goal, we didn't do anything. I don't think we created a single meaningful chance in the second half. And another worry was that Chris Julian, who had problems like against like Lyndon Dykes the year before, he really had a poor game. Robbie Parker gave away the penalty. No, I mean, okay, it was early in the season, but that result was a concern. I mean, you think, oh, aye, we'll have plenty of time to catch up on that. But no, it was just a lifeless performance, and that was only after the second game of the season. That was the biggest worry, that we would turn in such a stinker after only two games.
Yeah, it was poor, wasn't it? And that was a game as well, John, where a lot of people... Now, after that game, you know what it's like? You always say it's a disaster when Celtic don't win. You know what I mean? A draw is just as bad as a defeat. But I remember Odson Edward that game had a terrible performance. Could be argued he never really got the service all game either, though. But I remember people saying as early as the second game of the season, Edward's attitude wasn't ideal, and he didn't look the same player as what he was last season. He wasn't motivated, and he just didn't look as sharp off the ball or anything, and on it, he was dilly-dallying a lot. Now, a lot of these people, probably, John, if we saw them at the time, we would have been saying, bosh, Flimshaw, away you go, you're overreacting. But it's fair to say that Edward, from the second game in, wasn't quite the same player, and we've just got to admit that one.
I know. It's strange saying that when he still scored 20-plus goals this season, but no, I mean... I don't know if that's because, like, maybe Celtic said you can leave like in August, the August window, or something we'll talk about later, maybe points towards that. And, I mean, another incident as well, the ball and goalie, we'll talk about that. I mean, he probably wasn't happy what happened there, because I think he was a pal of his. But no, it was a strange one. I don't know if maybe it was Lennon that says to him, like, you'll do better if you try and beat every man, because he did keep trying to do that, which was annoying at times, but he still scored more than 20 goals. He was probably still one of your top three players this season, which isn't said much. And if he does leave this summer, he'll be a massive loss, because I don't want people just to remember this season for Eddie, because over the piece, he's been absolutely brilliant. Maybe slightly not as good as Moussa Dembele, another brilliant player. Well done to him for winning the La Liga title. But no, Odson Edwards is an absolutely fantastic Celtic player, and we'll be doing well to get a striker anywhere near as good as him next season, but he didn't have a good season by his lofty standards. And I suppose the warning signs were there early on.
Yeah, I remember that one each game at Rugby Park as well, thinking a lot of people were overreacting, and just, as you say, John, when Celtic don't win, a lot of people lose the nut. But it was evident that a lot of people were justified this season in saying, you know, the problems were that Celtic, you could tell they weren't as fluid. It's what they had been after Christmas, or rather the New Year break last season. The midfield weren't creating anything, and up front there was no movement, just all over the place against Kilmarnock. We didn't look impressive, and that would carry on. However, Neil Lennon said after it, like he always does, he was bitterly disappointed, of course, but he would take the draw because apparently Rugby Park is a tough place to go, despite the fact that we did okay there after Steve Clarke left.
And despite the fact that they're 11th now in the playoffs.
In fact, that's right, they play tomorrow, don't they?
Play Dundee, aye. I watched some of that first game the other day, and they were horrendous. So, and we won there, I think, 4-0.
February,
aye. Like, and that was when we were really bad. So I don't know if that really, that might be one of just Lenny's comments, you think, oh aye, and just you forget he said.
Before we move on, talking about another key situation just after that game, who do you want to come up? Dundee, or would you rather Kilmarnock stayed in the top flight?
Dundee, because I've not got a plastic pitch.
And also the fact that it'll bring more to Scottish football, because they'll have a derby against Dundee United.
That as well. I mean, maybe not the best team, but I've not got a plastic pitch, and really, it'd be good to get rid of two of the plastic pitch teams with Hamilton. Oh, Hamilton, I've went down as well, and I know you loved Hamilton. So, yes, we won't miss them.
Now, of course, Neil Lennon said he was bitterly disappointed after the draw at Rugby Park, but that would be nothing compared to how raging he was after the stone he broke, the volley bowling goalie, Flutie Malaga, before that game, and then came back and played in it. I think he came on as a sub in the last like 10 minutes or so. Now this kicked off what would be a massive amount of drama, not only in Scottish football, but in Scotland itself. And am I not right in saying, John, at one point it was actual UK news on ITV and everything too?
Unfortunately, it was. I mean, this is, for me, I know it is a bit of a laugh. This is the moment that defined the season for me. I mean, this just... we didn't recover for it. We should have, and we had the players to recover it, but I think everybody was so discombobulated by what happened that, and we, of course, we had games postponed, and I just don't think we recovered.
Well, of course, Nicola Sturgeon, our dear leader herself, that was when she gave a yellow card to Scottish football as well, John.
Yes. Actually, don't forget, a load of Aberdeen players had went to the pub, as far as I remember, and they had 8 players banned. But of course, they had 2 games, if nobody remembers, we had 2 games postponed, and so did Aberdeen. So automatically, we were like behind Rangers, who'd made, unfortunately, a good start to the season. So it put us under loads of pressure. But it really just was unbelievable. What always is interesting supporting Celtic, and I remember texting you after it about how just hilariously mad it was, and it's still just unbelievable in the way it happened. And it's probably not even the most ridiculous thing involving COVID at Celtic Park this season, but you should talk about in, I think, the January episode.
Yeah, our beloved Spunk Phone will be covering that one. But focusing on the Bowley incident,
aye,
Neil Lennon basically said that he came out and he just went in a full-scale shoot, didn't he? CM Punk would have been proud. But he went in a shoot in a presser, basically saying Bowley has his own motives for why he kept it to himself. That would mean the travel when he didn't inform the club. For me, that speaks volumes, not just of him as a sports person, but of him as a person. It is very, very underhand what he did. It's reprehensible behaviour from one individual. This is a rogue who has gone off on a tangent and decided to do something very, very selfish. Now, Neil Lennon knows about very, very selfish decisions. Of course, we'll get into that later on, I'm sure. But I was wondering, though, I know Neil Lennon has a tendency to fly off the handle and doesn't really keep his emotions in check, John, as we know from his previous spells as manager. But I do think that he handled that pretty poorly. Now, I know that he was probably under an enormous amount of pressure, not only from the club, but the government. All eyes were on Celtic. And when I put the Potter angle away just for a side, Bowley was stupid. There's no doubt about that. It was a daft thing to do. But also do think that there should have been a stern discipline of him. But ultimately, he shouldn't have just been kicked out of the club, because as it transpired, John, we probably could have done with him this season.
In a way, I can understand the reaction, because it was the first breach. It was back in August. We never had like this massive vaccine programme. And the GigPod fans will be delighted to know that me and you both had our first vaccine last week.
Yes, Bill Gates is controlling us both.
Exactly. No, I mean, in a way, I can understand. Unfortunately, I can also understand why Sturgeon was so extremely furious, and I'm not exactly a fan of Sturgeon. I mean, no, it was a mistake, I think, getting rid of him. And I don't think the players were happy about it. I mean, it wouldn't surprise me if, like, Eddie and Cham, some of the other players wouldn't have been happy, like, the way he just, like, had to leave. But in a way, I can understand, because I think Celtic were probably... I think they were in a sort of panic, and I can't blame them, because I really think... I really think that if they could have, the season would have got shut down. And probably that would have been the best for us as well.
Yes.
But no, I mean, it wouldn't have shocked me if something had happened, like, after that. If another player, or if something had happened like in September, when all like a big thing like that, then they would have just shut the season down, and that would have just destroyed Scottish football if that had happened. I mean, it's bad enough to know we no fans, like that cup final yesterday. It wasn't the best game, but I mean, having no fans compared to the games in England, it's just unwatchable. I mean, hopefully that will change next season, but it was a mistake. Bowley made a mistake, and he should have got disciplined for it. And I can understand why they get the sent him on loan, but I think probably it was a mistake in hindsight. I mean, he's due to come back in the close season. I mean, will he have a future at Celtic? He might. You never know. It depends what the new manager thinks. But I can understand why they've done it, but I think it was just a weird situation and they thought, we just need to handle this the best way we can is send ball away and loan. But I think it probably was an error on judgment, really. He did it.
Yeah, and let me ask you this one, right? Now, obviously, it was because of the public health crisis that, you know, the microscope was on Celtic and Bowley especially. Aye. But let me ask you this one. Say Bowley, right, didn't go away. Say he just had a party or something and he's flat. And say he was not 100% sober coming onto Rugby Park and he played and it turned out, right, that he was actually had alcohol in his system, for talking sake.
Aye.
Do you think he would have been given less of a harsher sort of sentence than what he was with flying away to Malaga? Because when you look at it, you compare that with Lee Griffiths and what he did in July, I'm just wondering here.
Oh, look, if a player like played with alcohol in the system,
if Bowley basically didn't go to Malaga, but he had also alcohol in his system and he wasn't 100% sober, do you think the punishment would have still been that severe, or would Celtic have just gave him a wee fine?
No, I think that would have been a severe punishment as well, because it would be extremely unprofessional and all. Like, play with a hangover. I mean, it's not the 1960s anymore.
Don't know. I'm fairly sure Lenny did sometimes in the 2000s.
Well, how dare you? One day there'll be a statue of him at Celtic Park. But, that'd be a huge thing as well. I mean, especially if we get out to the press, people would go ballistic. No, so I think that would be... I think that might actually, nowadays, be an offence you get rid of somebody for. So,
okay, well, here you are then. Well, here you are then, right? I was setting you up there, because if you can't do that, then what he could have done was definitely have a takeaway and pile on the pounds and be unfit, because of course he would have been forgiven for that, no doubt.
Oh, you mean like Lee Griffiths?
Yes, let's talk about him and how he let us down massively. Now, I have never been a massive Lee Griffiths fan, but I do respect that on his day. He's a very, very good finisher. But, you know, we're getting into our most important season, John, and the fact that he already had several months time off, really, to keep himself fit, all he needed to really do was, like everybody else, John, turn up on time, be fit, help us out over in France for the friendlies that we had. He couldn't even do that. He was too busy going to Castlemilk, smashing takeaways, and that's all right, if that's myself or you, John. We can get away with that, but when you're a top, you know, top level professional like Griffiths is meant to be, massively, massively let us down. And amazingly enough, for the umpteenth time in his Celtic career and in his football career in general, he was given yet another chance by Neil Lennon.
No, I mean, he really must be kicking himself, because he's not in the Scotland squad for the Euros. And if you think about how well he was playing for us before the shutdown last March, I mean, he'd be a guarantee he maybe even start for Scotland. I mean, he took a penalty in the shootout that we won, Scotland won, and he's not even made the squad. I mean, Kevin Nisbet, fair play to him. He's a decent finisher, but I mean, on his day, Lee Griffiths is a much better player than him. Let's be sensible. But no, I mean, I don't know if he's the sort of guy that has regrets, but if he does, I'm sure he'll look back at this in years to come and think, I really made an arse of that. But no getting the Scotland, in the Scotland squad for like the first tournament since 1998. Like, you would think he was a stick on. And no, I mean, I think it'd probably for the best if, even though we need to buy hundreds of players, no, literally, but we need to buy loads of players this summer, I think it'd probably be for the best if Celtic and him came to an agreement and he moved on. I mean, I'm hoping that the new guys get, like, stricter regimes and, like, what players have done in the past wouldn't they be allowed. So, don't get any takeaways and don't go to Spain. So, I think he's been a good player for us. I mean, he helped liven up some really dull seasons, like in the middle of 9 in a row. So, overall, he's been a good signing, but he's not really been very reliable in the last year, and I think it's for the best if Celtic move on.
And do you know what Neil Lennon also said about Lee Griffiths?
What did he say?
He was bitterly disappointed in him. Yeah, so indeed, the Bowley incident, Nicola Sturgeon's wee meltdown, and the Scottish Government panicking meant that it was 9 days later that we would play football at all, actually, but it would be a Champions League game and not a Scottish Premiership match that we'd be playing first. We beat KR Reykjavik 6-0. John, I mean, if we just glance over this one, we didn't really find out a lot. We were always going to be winning that. John, Celtic might have not played for about a month before that. and we would have still ran out winners there. So we never really learned anything, didn't we not?
Greg Taylor scored. I mean, he's not a guy that scores many goals, so I think that tells you there's no disrespect to Greg Taylor. And we're not him for getting into Euro squad, but I mean, I think that tells you Reykjavik's probably were not too much of like a guy like Greg Taylor who scores rarely, caught to the back of the net. But that was a game we were always going to win.
In the 9 days that we never played, Rangers played two games while we were sin-binned. They beat St Johnston. Well done to them, winning the Scottish Cup yesterday. They beat them 3-0 at Ibrox, but they dropped points in a turgid 0-0 away draw at the Anthony Macaroni Arena against Livingston. Now, I'm wondering, John, was this result potentially piling on more complacency with many connected with Celtic, assuming they had the chance to win the two games, but they've buckled under the slightest bit of pressure again?
Probably, because we see it happen so often before under Gerrard. It happened.
I mean, we had a laugh at it.
Exactly. I mean, and it happened loads of times, like in the 2019-20 season. So, no, I mean, it probably wasn't a surprise. It dropped points in Livingston, isn't it an easy place to go, especially for us? But no, you probably thought, oh, that's fine then. Like, we can take advantage of that. So, that is probably what everybody thought. They'll just fall apart again.
And we were back to league duty on August the 22nd. Now, Rangers had beat Kilmarnock 2-0 at Ibrox. We had to take 3 points at Tannadice against Michael Mellon's newly promoted Dundee United. They had taken 7 points from 12 already. Just wondering, John, was this when it became really obvious that Scott Brown was seriously on the decline at Celtic? Now, we know we get a 1-0 win. We were texting each other during this game. I remember watching it with my gran and my granda and my uncle too. And I just remember, I don't know if I broke the rules there. Oh, well, nevertheless. Anyway, trying to get the jail live on air. No, so we did win 1-0. It was Albion Ayeti. He got the goal late on his debut. But usually, while that's a sign of champions, I think we can both agree this was masking the problems of this Celtic side, for one, but also my Brown point. I think that was the moment, John, where I watched this one thinking we're in trouble here if we keep mismanaging Scott Brown.
It was a poor performance. I mean, it was one of the rare games where Ryan Christie's long-range shots actually were on target. And I think it was one of his shots that led to the goal, or JT bundled in the rebound. Brown was poor. I mean, I know I've said it before, he was a brilliant player for us overall, and Bo Godun is one of the best of our players, I reckon. One of the best of our captains. But I think the layoff really hindered him more than MD. I mean, from March to the end of July, with no competitive football, I just don't think his body was able to cope with it. And so it proved. I mean, he probably should have been dropped a season a lot earlier than it was, and then for some unfathomable reason, John Kennedy brought him back into the team. I don't know why that was. I think it was just like a farewell type of thing. But no, he was poor that day, and I know winning, playing poorly is a sign of champions, but that was a bit of a concern. I mean, I know they started the season decently. They'd got promoted the season before, but no, that was a warning sign, and it was concerning, especially seeing as how only a few days later we had this massive Champions League qualifier.
Not only that, John, it's two very surprising things in that team. There was a lot of online pressure. I remember that Oliver Cham wasn't starting. People were crying out for him to be given a start. He did start against Dundee United, and he was utterly, utterly terrible.
The thing is, he still kept his place in the team for the next game against Ferencváros. Yeah,
which we'll get into. But also, let me tell you this one. Do you know who was in centre defence that day? It wasn't Chris Ayer. Neil Beaton was ahead of him, partnering Chris Julian that day.
Neil Beaton didn't have the best of seasons either. I don't know. I suppose the warning signs were there. I mean, you would be wanting us to go and like putting down markers and hammering teams, but instead in our two away games we'd have won each draw and be like scraped a 1-0 win at a team had just been promoted. So that was a concern, but you didn't think the wheels were going to fall off the way that they did.
Talking about wheels falling off, John, it wasn't it just that it was an all round. I mean, the Celtic bus went up in flames. It was Celtic 1, Ferencváros 2, August the 26th. Now I'm just going to let you shoot here, because to this day you don't shut up about it being one of the worst results of the season.
Lenny made that bizarre decision, which he'd done before, to play Ryan Christie up front. And fair enough, Ryan Christie scored. But Ryan Christie's not a striker. The thing is, we had strikers on the bench. Kamal was on the bench. Ajay was on the bench. Ajay ended up coming on with 12 minutes to go. But no, it was such a needless gamble playing a midfielder up front. I mean, I know Christie likes to take shots and go, but it was just never going to work. And then the goals we gave away were just really bad. El Hamed especially was at fault for the second one. And it was just dreadful. And I know I said the ball and goalie moment changed the season. I think the other moment that changed the season was Lenny's interview after the game, when he perhaps ill-advisedly suggested that there was some players that were playing the team that wanted to leave, and he was going to get rid of them. But when the transfer window shut, nobody had left. So that was just a catastrophe. I mean, that was so daft. I mean, I know it was typical Lenny to be like pissed off after a bad defeat, and I can't blame him, but no, you don't do that. You don't throw players under the bus. And the worst thing is, none of the players get sold. I mean, okay, people would have been livid if, like, it was Ayer, for example, wanted to leave and we sold him, or Encham or Eddie. But I think it would have been better. Maybe no Ayer, because he was one of a few good players this season, but if people aren't happy, you just sell them. You don't keep them and make a bad environment at the club. And Lenny really shouldn't have said that. I know he sort of tried to get out of it a few days later by saying, like, I saw an excuse for it, but no, that was the sign that this season wasn't going to go as we all hoped. I mean, okay, we've usually been dreadful in Europe. I mean, we've not reached the Champions League in the last few years, but like, this was a one-off game. I mean, we still had another round after this as well, but like, it was only one leg this time. Like, we knew, like, we had to win this. And not only did we turn in a terrible performance with Lenny doing a selection brain fart, but then to come out after the game and say people want to leave, but then nobody leaves. No, you don't do that. And the two things in August we didn't recover for, ball and goalie, and that Lenny state comments, Celtic just didn't recover for that.
I think against Ferencváros, John, was when I really noticed that a new pattern to Celtic's play for poor decision making. So let me rhyme off this one for you, stat-wise. We had 28 shots against Ferencváros, with only 9 on target, right? Now, I remember that going, what is going on here? Because against Dundee United, we had 23 shots, but only 9 were on target again. And then before that, against Kilmarnock, we only had 2 on target out of a possible 17. So right away, you knew our decision-making was poor, and people were starting to question that, going, I mean, what is the difference here? Because we were so clinical last season to misfiring this season. And then, do you remember against Ferencváros as well, John? I personally don't think he did anything wrong, but that was like the start where Barkas was starting to get questioned over 2 goals that I felt he really could do nothing with.
No, Barkas didn't do much wrong in that game. I mean, his sort of one real bad performance was until we played Rangers in October. No, the thing I've really noticed this season, we are like creating so many chances, is like 2 things. Number one, the absolutely ridiculous like constantly shoot through all angles everywhere. I know that Christy Hinks has been told to do that, but that just doesn't work anymore. And the other thing is that a lot of players, they seem to hesitate and take an extra touch but when they can shoot. I think really Eddie and Ilanusia are mostly the guilty for that. Even if you look at that game against Hibs, that nothing game last week, I mean, Ilanusia had chances, and if he'd like hit it maybe after one touch or first time, he would have scored. Like against like Rangers as well. I mean, that one, I think it was a cup, when Ilanusia had that great chance, but he took that extra bad touch. So I don't know if the players' confidence were shot to bits, but it shouldn't have been in August. But no, I mean, whoever told them to like, shoot all the time, take shots and goal constantly, that was a mistake. And I don't know if that led to them players thinking, oh, we need to take an extra touch then. But both the things have been a big reason why we've not scored as many goals as we should have this season. I mean, we definitely should have scored far more than we did.
To give them a bit of credit, Ferencváros did actually qualify for the Champions League group stages. They were horsed off Barcelona and Juventus, but we can't laugh at that. We have lightly done the same. I believe Dynamo Kiev also beat them too. But, you know, when you look at us in the Europa League, we're not in a position to laugh at anyone's record in Europe.
I know. I mean, but they weren't a good team, that's the thing. And we had that Champions League.
Neither do we, though.
That's true. But we had that Champions route again that we constantly ballsed up. I mean, hopefully Rangers will do the same this season coming up. We're going to have a good laugh at them. But they weren't a great team, but then we were just stupid. That's the only word you can describe it, stupid.
Yep, and also, before we move on to the last game in August, John, this was really when we noticed the impact that Lee Griffiths and his unprofessionalism had on us, because, you know, you're thinking 65-70 minutes, Ferencváros were looking pretty tired. Maybe you can shove a guy like him on, because Lee Griffiths realistically is a 20-minute fitness man. But That would have been great. Like, you know, shove him on up front, have an actual recognised striker, a guy that pops up, you know, when other teams are tiring and faltering. But no, that was something else that cost us. And he, massively not only let us down, but himself. And look where he is now, likely going to have his contract ripped up. He's not going to get in a Scotland team again. And I don't think he'll ever play at the top level again, certainly nowhere in Europe again.
I would doubt it. And I just have to say, I don't want to make excuses, of course, because we don't. But Eddie missed that game. He was injured and he was a big miss. I mean, we probably would have qualified or won that game anyway if he'd been there, but he was injured and we had the players, though we'd all strikers, no Griffiths, but we'd all players available to deal with it whenever. So it's their own fault.
And I remember after that, there was all the negative headlines that plagued Celtic Park. There was all this talk about an exodus. Amazingly enough, John, that never happened anyway. But there was all this talk about an exodus and would Lennon lose his job and the next result against Motherwell. If we even drop points there, that could be a catastrophe. You know what, in hindsight, looking back on it, if we did and we had a change of manager back in August, we might have had a more successful season. But no, Celtic went on to win 3-0. James Forrest, Albion Ayeti and Christopher Julian scoring against what was just a lacklustre Motherwell team. Absolutely dismal.
The only one I really remember about this is I think that Ayeti scored a good goal. It's hard to...
He just rattled it full force for like 6 yards out.
It's hard probably for people to remember, but he actually did have a good start to his Celtic career. Ayeti, I thought he was going to be a decent player, but... No, it's sort of flattered to deceive. And Forrest, of course, he scored and he was a massive loss this season. We'll talk, I know you and the other guys can talk about it more in the episodes to come, but we probably wouldn't have won the league this season even if Forrest had been fully fit, but he was still a big loss.
And also, John, it was yet another changed defensive shape. I mean, we still, fought the back, more personnel, because Frimpong, who he was criticised against Ferencváros, he was dropped. So El Hamed, who was the guy that, you know, sold the jerseys, in my opinion, for the second goal, he retained his place in the team. He started at right back. Funnily enough, Frimpong came on and then set up Julian to make it 3-0. Strange stuff.
Actually, that was a good goal, But Julian, it wasn't he one of his headers for once.
That was, took it in his left foot, didn't he?
He did. But no, I mean, I suppose, like, that one was maybe a sign that, okay, we've got the catastrophe of Ferencváros out of our system. If only that had been the case.
If only, John. A season of if onlys. So, John, I do believe you have some August 2020 sporting facts for the GigPod fans.
I certainly do, fans. I couldn't really find any, like, world events because we were still under this lockdown, which will hopefully soon be over. But there you go. On August the 16th, the sensational Ronnie O'Sullivan, a sporting genius, won his sixth World Snooker Championship. He beat Kyron Wilson 18-8 in the final. Would you say that Celtic, Ronnie O'Sullivan's a Celtic or snooker? I don't know if that works. A genius, but when he's good, he's the best he can be. And when he's bad, he's no good at all. That's sort of, I suppose. But now, Ronnie O'Sullivan, a brilliant snooker player, and he was brilliant in that final. But then there you go, football-related, August the 23rd, Bayern Munich won the treble. They beat PSG in the delayed Champions League final in Lisbon. Kingsley Coman scored the only goal as they won 1-0. In a game that wasn't bad, PSG were actually not bad in Europe for once. But no, well done to Bayern, who were brilliant that strange season.
And we were also talking about number one in the charts back in 2020. I mean, John, we are two old men who are we so out of touch? No, it's everybody else who's wrong. We Simpsons reference for the fans there. But no, apparently Head and Heart by Joel Corey featuring... how do you pronounce that? Is it Emnek or Minik?
I don't know. I'm deeply embarrassed to say it. I don't know. Me
who... I am really out of my depth here. But yeah, there we are. So from the end of July to the middle of September, this Head and Heart by Joel Corey featuring the person I can't even pronounce. Is it? I'm going to go with Emnek. I'm just going to say Emnek. Yeah, that dominated. It ruled supreme, unlike Celtic, eh?
Yes. We didn't. I kind of think getting funny to say. I was actually trying to find Emnek's pronunciation, but hold on. Mn. Oh, no, it doesn't matter. Right, forget that.
Well, that wasn't expertly covered at all. But I would say Celtic in August 2020 was expertly covered by GigPod. Now I'm Stevie. Thanks for listening, John. Do you want to say your wee cheerio?
Yep. Thanks everybody for listening. I'll be back to do the May episode, so that was another exciting, fun month. But I know we've got plenty of guests coming up to do the rest of the year, and we've got my old pal Hamish for 6-7 Hail Hail. He's coming on to do the next episode. But thanks, Stevie. As you always, you can follow us on Twitter at GigPod, and you know where to find us by now. I mean, on all the usual platforms, leave us reviews, give us 5 stars, tell us how great we are. But no, it was good to look back in anger, as it's been said, on this wonderful season, and May was just the start of that. But thanks as usual, Stevie.
Not a problem, John. So we'll be back for the next Premiership Yields show with Hamish Carthen of 6-7 Hail Hail, who will be covering September 2020. A month when the UK braced itself for a huge battle against the second wave of coronavirus and considered shutting the pubs as its major defensive plan. While Celtic had their own defensive contingencies when they brought in Shane Duffy.
Podcast Network.